You are listening to Grandpa Lampshade on RadioArian.com.
Hello, once again. That's right. It's installment episode number 2 of the all-new Church of the Lampshade show with your host, Grandpa Lampshade. Thank you for joining us this week, folks. I'm still trying to feel out how I want this show to be, and I haven't quite put my finger on it. I thank y'all for bearing with me, I'll get my feet under me and really get back into the groove of the show. So, like I said, I still haven't quite put my finger exactly how I want this. I did Thoughts of the Day for so long that I kind of find myself falling into the Thoughts of the Day groove, and I get done. I really wasn't happy with the first installment of the show, be honest. I hope y'all got something out of it. I really wasn't satisfied with it because, again, I kind of tend to just fall right into the Thoughts of the Day format, and I really want to try to make this something new, something different. But also, while saying that, also keeping some of the good positive aspects that everybody loved about the Thoughts of the Day show. And we'll get there. We'll get this figured out. And I think in the end, it's going to be something really, really neat. So again, I thank you for joining us for installment episode number 2 of the Church of the Lampshade. And as always, we like to sit around and visit a little bit before we go in and have this week's sermon. I think you're going to enjoy this week's sermon. The theme of this week's sermon is In This World and Not of This World. And we're going to cover it's a general theme, and we're going to get kind of broad with that and touch on several different things that I think as Christian believers, you'll find interesting. And if you're not a Christian believer and decide to stick around with it, I think you might find it interesting as well. That's, as always, up to you. Hat tip and thanks to Billy Roper over the Roper Report, having me on his show recently. Good stuff. I really enjoyed the conversation. Appreciate him having me on for the visit. It's kind of great just to get out here and, you know, and get to talking to people again, and really just kind of starting to get back into the broadcasting groove here with the tumultuous last 2 or 3 weeks that have been going on. And on that note, I continue to trying to figure out a way moving forward. I figured that my best option moving forward is to figure out some way to self-employ, and I'm trying to figure that out. One of the ideas I'm tossing around is writing some books, ebooks, and putting those out there. And I'm not talking like Mein Kampf size tomes that are going to take a year to write. I'm just stuff you could sit down and read, break 6, 7, 8 chapters maybe. You could sit down and read in an hour or so in the evening. Put it in for starters like a PDF format. Eventually I could put it into like a Kindle format. Not interested in trying to do it on Amazon or anything. One thing, we know how this works. They eventually get us kicked off, shut down. But second of all, I don't really like the idea of giving basically what amounts to our enemies a cut of what little money we can make. I don't like that. I'm thinking we could utilize the P.O. box that we're using now. And so I'll keep y'all posted on that. But if you want to give me some feedback on that, hit me up on Gab. Or, of course, I've got email, grandpalampshade1@gmail.com. Don't forget the number 1 in there. And your feedback's welcome. Tell me kind of what you think. I don't know. I've got to figure out something moving forward where I'm not dependent on an employer that our enemies can go after. You know, I don't want to just keep going through this cycle over and over and over again. And we got to figure out something that'll work. We'll figure it out between myself and y'all. We'll get something worked out. Again, thank y'all for joining us this week. Lots of stuff going on. Of course, been the big things everybody's talking about is that Jussie Smollett hoax. I just can't believe anybody believed that to begin with. You know, I mean, I'm not claiming to be like super brilliant. Y'all know me. I'm just a regular guy, just like the rest of you. But when this story first hit, I mean, I didn't even have to think about it. I didn't have to, like, study it. Like, is this real or is this a hoax? I mean, this is a bigger hoax than Jews claiming that they're being targeted by Nazis and, you know, because there's backwards messed up swastikas spray painted on the synagogue door. I mean, this is lower tier than that. I mean, obviously this guy came up with this on his own because it doesn't reach the higher tier of hoax as if the Jews planned it out. It's pretty low tier stuff. I mean, the whole Chicago MAGA country at 2 a.m. in Chicago in below freezing weather. This is MAGA country in Chicago. I mean, come on. I mean, the guy, I don't know. He didn't put a lot of thought into it. He didn't really plan this out, or he tried to do it on the cheap by hiring these two Nigerians to hook him up with the hoax. And it was because his first hoax, where he mailed himself a hate letter, you know, that hoax didn't play. It didn't get the traction he wanted. He was angry over that. So he made up this stupid MAGA attack hoax. And yeah, you know, now all that has come around and it's biting him in the ass. And of course, all these Hollywood leftist celebrities and all these people, you know, they're jumping up now they're mad at him. You know, they're upset and they're angry. And what they're really upset about here, and make no mistake, what they're upset about is that it's not true. I mean, they're not so much, yeah, they're upset that he made it up, but that's almost like secondary. What they were really upset about is it wasn't true, and they, you know, they were getting all, trying to gin themselves all up for more anti-Trump, which, make no mistake, always, really, when you get down to it, the Trump thing is just the mega thing. That's just like a cover. It really comes down to being anti-white. I mean, you know, they get so blinded by this that they wind up attacking, like, brown people that happen to have a MAGA hat on. They're like, hey, I'm Mexican. And they're like, you're a white supremacist. You know, it sounds stupid when you hear about these things. But the truth of the matter is they are so blinded by their anti-white hatred, and they've associated with, like, Trump hats and things like that with AKA white supremacists. It doesn't matter if it's like a brown person wearing one. They still go off and scream at them and call them a white supremacist. It's just amazing to watch. And so what they're really upset about isn't that the guy lied. That's secondary to the fact they're upset that it wasn't true. And, you know, speaking of red Trump hats being the new Klan hood and things such as that, other news coming out this week, the MAGA teen, you know, which we talked about that last week, as far as, you know, how they targeted this person that didn't do anything. He's there with his class. He was being harassed by lunatic leftists, and they were calling him Hitler Youth and MAGA hoods, MAGA caps, rather, the new Klan hoods and all that ridiculousness. News this week, this kid's family's got a little money, and they've got some lawyers together, and they're suing the Washington Post for like $250 million. And that is just awesome. That is just awesome. It's no secret that I have legal counsel working on something of a very similar angle. This is what needs to happen. Journalism is journalism. You know, but what we've got now is not journalism. These are not reporters going out and discovering truths and reporting the facts. We don't have that. What is passing as journalism today is nothing more than left-wing Marxist activism, and they put the fig leaf of journalism on there. You love the First Amendment, don't you? Well, yes, we do love the First Amendment. Then you don't want to shut down the journalism. But this isn't journalism. You're slandering people. You were calling this kid and his class Hitler Youth. They had to shut down the school for a week because of death threats. I mean, that's not journalism. Was this kid's high school class that was going to see Washington, D.C. and how the system works and got a better lesson than they ever anticipated? Was that a fact? Were they Hitler Youth? No, it was not a fact. See, it's not journalism. It's left-wing activism. And if they want to do left-wing activism, they need to be open about it. They shouldn't be able to hide behind the press, the privileged press. They're not the privileged press. The thing I like about this lawfare when it comes to these left-wing activists posing as journalists is virtually all of these news outlets, Washington Post, you name it, they're all money losers. They are. They're money losing. I mean, from just strictly a capitalist corporatist standpoint, they're turds in a punch bowl. You've got your corporate portfolio and, you know, that you've got your stuff that's making money. Look at HuffPo. It's owned by Verizon. You know, Verizon makes their money selling phone service, crappy phone service probably, but I don't know. I don't have them. But yeah, you know, phone service, internet, things like that. That's where Verizon makes their money. That's where their money making. Then over here, they have this turd HuffPo that doesn't make any money. They just had to lay a bunch of people off, and they're going out there doing left-wing activism. And you have to wonder, you know, I mean, does Verizon really want to alienate that large of a segment of their customer base? They only want to sell phone service and internet service to left-wing activists, to far left? Because the day needs to come where these people aren't able to say, well, that's separate. No, you own it. Verizon owns HuffPo. Amazon owns the Washington Post. Does Amazon's making all their money off of Amazon? Do they want to see a dent start showing up in that? Because of left-wing activism from so-called journalists at the Washington Post. So what needs to happen? Some people sit there and say, well, it won't work. There's always people that are going to say it won't work. And you know, you may be right. What do you get out of it if you are? Okay, that didn't work. But I keep maintaining if we don't do something, I mean, the only thing guaranteed not to work, the only way things are guaranteed not to change is to sit around and do nothing. And I'm sorry, I don't like the idea of sitting around going, well, nothing's going to change, so I might as well just sit here and not do anything. Piss on that. I mean, really? I mean, I'd rather try and fail than just to sit around, throw my hands up and say, well, I guess nothing we try is going to work. Not about that. I don't believe in it. Oh, yeah, and I wanted to take the time to once again thank y'all for your support, this outpouring of support. I'm sorry, but I can't miss a chance to plug it. If you want to continue to support us here, support me and my family in these hard times. It's on the bottom of the description of the page, but yeah, it is Legal Fund, P.O. Box 6621, Granbury, Texas, 76049. It's down on the bottom of the description. It'll be in the description. You can find it anywhere. It's up on my Gab page and things such as this. And as always, open and full disclosure, this money is going back to help offset any possible legal costs, and also to help me keep the lights on, pay the utility bill, do whatever I've got to do to keep supporting my family, because I'm basically virtually unemployed unemployable right now. And so, you know, until I figure out a way in which I can be self-employed and not be dependent on this vulnerability, you know, it's what I got. And I just, and again, of course, putting that out there, I've received this. Y'all have included letters, and I've read each and every one of y'all's letters that you've enclosed that you've mailed to the P.O. box, and I'm very moved by all of them. And there's people who, you know, I mean, I'm not a far right wing guy like you, but what's happening to you and what's happened to your family is total bullshit here, you know, and that's great. I mean, you know, I'm not slapping the hand away of anybody because you're not 100% on board with me. We've got to make alliances when and where we can. And I can say I've read everybody's letters that you send, and it's moved my heart. I've read several of them out loud to the family because I thought they were moving. And then those of you encouraging me in my Christian faith to hold fast that the Lord is with us, it means more than you know. It really, honestly, it does. I'm not just telling you that because I want you to send me money or some other bullshit. It means a lot. And I discussed this before, and I'm not going to harp on it. But again, one of the things when your enemies come after you like this, their tactic is to marginalize you and to isolate you and to pick you off and to try to make you as alone as you possibly can. And then you're easy pickings. And the best way to counter that is to do the opposite. You want to be not isolated. And I mean, these things, you know, they, we do what we can, and the support I've received from all of y'all, the support my family's received from all y'all has meant a lot. But anyway, getting back on topic. No, this is what needs to happen. People need to start fighting back. And I'm glad this young person's family isn't taking this lying down. I'm glad they didn't sit there and say, well, it's blown over. They're going on about the neon Nazi podcaster now. Now they've quit calling my kid Hitler Youth. I'm glad they haven't let it go. I'm glad they've decided to stand up and start fighting back, because this is what's got to happen. I mean, you're a regular conservative MAGA person or whatever. Make no mistake, it's obvious they're coming after you, and you're going to have to choose a side, and you're going to have to start figuring out a way to fight back. One of the things all this has really made clear to me is the importance of us being able to rally around each other as a community. And we always get bogged down in infighting and bickering and stuff. But we need to be also, you know, and that's just human nature. It's just kind of the nature of the beast. I'm not saying we can, like, eliminate that. I don't have that kind of polyetic view of the world. I understand that that's part of it. And you know, it's kind of like family. You know, you can have a family that bickers and fights and maybe even gets in fist fights out in the front yard, you know. But yet, like, if an outsider steps in and touches one of the family members, they find that outsider finds themselves, you know, in surrounded by a group of angry people. The point being, we need to have that ability. We're going to have infighting. We're going to have disagreements. We're going to have bickering. That, you know, egos get involved. And just different people have a different point of view as far as what needs to be done, what's stupid, what's a good idea, so on and so forth. But we really also need to have a family mindset that we have these disagreements and things such as that. But when one of our own is singled out, one of our own is picked on or attacked, we really need to rally around. I've seen that in my case, and it's really has hammered home to me the importance of doing that. And I think it's something we need to think about definitely moving forward. Anybody right now, unfortunately, I'm not in a position to offer financial support for obvious reasons, but you know, if you get any of y'all, you know, if you're getting doxxed, or you, if you just want to talk or something like that, or just email back and forth, again, grandpalampshade1@gmail.com. You know, you just need an ear to tell me what's going on. You know, don't be emailing me with some going off terroristy shit. I don't want any of that. I'm not going to have any part of that. But I mean, if you just need to talk about what's going on and problems as far as, you know, like, say, for instance, if you're getting doxxed or you're having problems like that, I can at least try to offer some, give back some emotional support. Depending on how all this shakes out, I do eventually want to set up more of a actual tangible support network, but that's down the road right now. I mean, I'm putting out fires of my own right now. But we're going to all get through this. We're going to all get through this together. We're going to come out of this stronger. I personally am learning lessons, and I'm hoping a lot of y'all are also kind of learning. We're all kind of learning from this. Again, some important things. We are a family. We have disagreements. We have different points of view, people on different ends of the spectrum, and people have different ideas of the way moving forward. And again, I don't have some naive view that we're going to make that disappear. And I don't think we should necessarily even try. But again, when one of our own is messed with, it's highly important that we all just keep rallying around one another and trying to make sure that nobody messes with our own. One of the traps that's really easy to fall into. It is. It's real easy to fall into because our enemies have a louder microphone than we do. They have a bigger platform. They don't worry. They don't run around at this point worrying about being shut down. Is to fall into the trap that you start mentally believing the things that your enemies say about you. And you'd want to really guard against that, because our enemies are very much about projection. And I talked about this a little bit when I was on with Billy over at the Roper Report. But these people are all about projection. And again, you know, we're always accused of the hate. Well, hate's an emotion. I personally don't go through my everyday life feeling the emotion of hatred. That doesn't get me up in the morning. That doesn't motivate me. I'm sitting here doing the show with everything I've been through. I'm not being motivated here by a feeling of hatred. I just don't live my life that way. And I don't think most of you do either. I guess there's a few of you out here there that do. If that's the case, I encourage you to try to change that mindset, because if you're going through your life with this mindset of hatred from the moment you get up to the time you go to bed, you're allowing your enemies to have power over you. You may not realize that. You may think this is something that really gets you going, but it's not. It's going to burn you out and burn you up from the inside. You're much more of a threat to the enemy if you can put those emotions aside and get a bigger perspective and start thinking logically. What can I do? What can I do? What tangible differences can I make to further the things that I believe in? Let me tell you something. With the outpouring of support I and my family have received through all of this, it isn't hatred. Y'all are not about hate. Okay, it's been love, support, Christian faith. It's really been amazing. And you look at these people, you look at your enemies. These are the people that are consumed with hate. What do they always say? Oh, y'all are just a bunch of lunatics sitting in your mom's basement. Look at these people. Look at their normie Twitter and Facebook profiles. They are literally sitting around like living with their parent. I mean, they're what they project onto you. And it's easy to start letting that get to you to where you start absorbing that emotionally. And I would say as a Christian believer, you start absorbing that spiritually. It starts becoming a spiritual disease on you. And you've got to guard against that. Don't forget who you are. Never lose sight of who you are. I saw a story this last week. It wasn't a big news story. It was just a small story. But this woman went into a store and her 14-year-old kid is with her. And he gets a Klan hood on. No, he had a Trump hat on. And this shitlib leftist that was previously working at this store goes up to this 14-year-old kid and is like, fuck you, kid, you know, because he has a Trump hat on. Pardon my French. We try to keep it very Christian. We try to keep it family friendly here. But that's what the guy said. I'm not going to sugarcoat it and be silly like we're a bunch of kindergartners and say the F word. You know, I mean, this is what he said. And the woman, of course, was outraged, raised hell about it. And yeah, I mean, they fired the shitlib leftist that did it. But, you know, I thought that was so telling. In my previous life that used to be before all of this happened to me, I dealt with black people. I dealt with brown people every single day. And you will not find one single one being truthful that can say I ever said anything ugly to him. I was ever anything but nice, courteous, and professional when it comes to dealing with it. I'm not patting myself on the back. I'm not saying the Democrats or the leftists are the real racists. What I'm saying is, again, it's all about projection. I don't go through my life hating people. I don't. I mean, if you expect me to do that, that's not going to happen. It's not how I live. However, I also do recognize that group behaviors are real. And these people do too. The leftists realize it too. There's a reason they live in white neighborhoods and they're not down here trying to live in the black neighborhoods. You know, I'm one of you, homie. Yeah. Because they know deep down inside what would happen. It's one of the things I think that makes him so hateful and so angry is because of that contradiction that they've got going on in their minds all the time. You know, they're sitting here raging and calling us racist and evil racist white supremacists and things such as that, because we point out the reality of racial and cultural differences, you know, as far as when it comes to group behaviors. And yet in the back of their mind, their subconscious, because your subconscious, I mean, your conscious part of your mind, you can sit there and bullshit your conscious mind. You can. You can sit there and bullshit your conscious mind, you know. It's like, well, yeah, you know. But your subconscious, you can't. You cannot fool your subconscious. And that's the part where you start finding when there's contradictions, you start getting emotionally unstable and things such as that, is because there's a contradiction in your subconscious. And these people have that because they rage against us because we point out the truth when it comes to racial and group differences and cultural differences between the different races. And they rage and they call us all of these names, but deep down inside they know they live in a white neighborhood. They, aside from some token black friends or whatever, they mostly associate with other white people. They mostly associate with other white people, and they live in predominantly white neighborhoods. It's a fact. They know they're not going to go hang out in the hood on Saturday night. Let's go find a culturally diverse club. Leftists, I encourage you, go down on Saturday night and find a culturally diverse club in the instead of going to your white hipster club that you go to on Saturday night and talk about how not racist you are, go down to the blackest part of the black neighborhood and pick out one of their bars and go hang out in them. You know, I mean, you're not racist, right? You don't want to be called a racist, right? You can solve that contradiction in your mind right now by going down to Saturday night, going down to the black neighborhood and picking a good black bar to hang out in. Quit being racist and hanging out in these white clubs where you know it's safe. That contradiction they have in their mind, it eats at them from the inside. It does. It eats at them from the inside out. And that contradiction, and it generates this emotional turmoil within them. And again, you wind up with this hatred, and they focus that anger at us. They project that anger on us. It's not their fault that they're hypocrites. It's not their fault that they live a hypocritical lifestyle. It's our fault. If we would just quit pointing these things out, then the world would match their fantasy world that they've created for themselves in their minds. Human nature is they don't like is human nature is that people don't like truth tellers. They always think of that little the kid's story, you know, about the emperor's new clothes, you know, and everybody's running around kissing the emperor's ass, you know. Oh, these are fine clothes. Why, he's being scammed, you know, it's an invisible thread, you know. And then they had the big parade and the emperor's out there. And finally, some kid points out, you know, the emperor's naked. And in the story, everybody's like relieved and starts laughing and mocking the emperor because they all knew it, too. They were just afraid to say it. And finally, someone spoke up and everybody mocked the emperor. That story is great and all, but it's not reality. It's not how things work. In reality, the kid would get lynched. You know, in reality, they would attack the kid, ruin his life, throw him in jail, make sure he couldn't go to school or have a future because he dared to point out the truth. That's the world we live in today. It's the world we live in today. People generally don't like the truth tellers. The truth tellers are never wind up being the most popular people in the room. The fact is not that the people want to notice the emperor has no clothes. They want to believe that he looks great. They want to believe the invisible threads are just a great, great thing. And boy, the most cutting edge technology available today. They want to believe the lie. That's just human nature. It's just the way people work. So if you're a truth teller, and honestly, if you're listening to this show, you're in an exclusive club. I mean, most people don't like the truth. They don't like hearing the truth. And so, yeah, if you're a truth teller, if you're a person that likes the truth, is sick of the world's lies, then again, congratulations. It's kind of a notorious club, but you are kind of in an exclusive club. We're going to go ahead and get into this week's sermon. Those of you that didn't want to stick around for that, you know, hey, thanks for joining us for our little visit here before Sermon Hymn. But this is the Church of the Lampshade Show, so we're going to go ahead and head on in. Head on in and start filling the pews and get this week's sermon in. So, and non-believers, you're welcome to join in if you want, but it's not like I'm sneaking it in on you. You know what you're getting here. This is a Christian themed deal here. So we're going to get on in here, fill the pews, and really get the Church of the Lampshade up and rolling here. And again, as I mentioned at the top of the show, we're kind of our general theme, we're going to kind of branch off from this, but is being in this world and not of this world. This is a common theme in Christianity. We're supposed to understand this. I don't think many of us do, but we are in this world. We're not of this world. What does that mean? How do we see that manifesting itself in human behavior, in the modern cuck church, in all kinds of Christian denominations? We see it all over. And one of the things I think is really telling is persecution. One of the big flags you will see that will give you an idea if you're living your life in this world and not of this world is, are you catching flack? Are you catching static from the world. We've got all these Christian churches. I could drive through my town here and you got all these churches from old school, you know, churches to down here, the modern hip young church. You know who's hip, kids? That's right, Jesus. You know, they, you know, have like rap sessions or something trying to be hip and cool and modern, you know, because one thing that needs to be modernized is Christianity. And, you know, and one of the things that's in common with all of those churches is, where's the persecution? Where's it at? Are they catching flack from the world, or does the world have no problem with them? And by and large, there's some, I'm sure, that are exceptions to that rule. I'm not saying all Christianity, but those who are gathered here in the Church of the Lampshade are cucks. I'm not saying that, but by and large, none of these churches are catching any flack. They're not being persecuted by the world. Why should they? They're not saying anything remotely controversial. Once in a while, one will, and you'll hear about it on the news. They usually, if the preacher stands up and preaches against sin, it could be a news story, because they usually run him out right away. Fire his ass. We don't need that sort of preaching here. It's hate. You'll notice that often hate and truth seem to be used interchangeably. They swap those terms out. So a big red flag is, are they catching any flack? Is there any persecution going on? And very seldom will you see that, because they're not. They're not saying anything controversial. It's a business for them. A lot of these churches, it's nothing more than a business. They've long ago adopted a business model. Bring in as many customers as you can. Bring in customers, and you want to give the customers what they want so that the customers will give you money. And so they're not about telling the truth, because as we already discussed, you know, truth-telling isn't generally real popular. You truth telling, you usually get this ebb and flow. You know, people are like so relieved to hear the truth. They're like, yes, and you'll get an influx of people that clamor to it. But then the next truth is something they don't like, and they ebb. It ebb and flows. They pull away. They don't like that. It made them uncomfortable. It's a truth they didn't want to hear. Well, you can't have a church run as a business model on that. I mean, you know, the idea is to keep growing. You're supposed to keep bringing customers in. You know, I remember back when I used to attend Cuck Church, probably some almost 20 years ago, and you know, they would say, if it's not growing, it's not godly, which is bullshit. I mean, if you look how it worked in the beginning churches, the early church, or when Christ himself was spreading his message of truth to the people, you know, he would tell the truth and there would be these huge crowds that would gather up around him, and then he would tell the next truth and they'd be all like, forget this, we're out of here, and he's back to his 12 dudes. That's the way it works. This is as good a spot as ever to stop and get our first scripture reading in the book of John, chapter 12. Then Jesus, 6 days before the Passover, came to Bethany, where Lazarus had been dead, whom he raised from the dead. There they made him a supper, and Martha served, but Lazarus was one of them that sat at the table with him. Then took Mary a pound of ointment of spikenard, very costly, and anointed the feet of Jesus and wiped his feet with her hair. And the house was filled with the odor of the ointment. Then saith one of his disciples, Judas Iscariot, Simon's son, which should betray him, why was not this ointment sold for 300 pence and given to the poor? This he said, not that he cared for the poor, but because he was a thief and had the bag and bare what was put therein. Then said Jesus, let her alone. Against the day of my burying hath she kept this. For the poor always ye have with ye, but me ye have not always. Judas, he was of the world. When it came down to it, he was of the world. Now, he was allowed into the group because he had a role to play. He was going to be the betrayer. I mean, he had a role to play. This couldn't have played out how it had to without his presence. But make no mistake, he was of the world. He wasn't sitting there worrying about the poor because he was like this righteous dude. He was thinking about the money. He was thinking about that 300 bucks or whatever. You know, he's like, man, you know, he's using the poor as a justification, but he's thinking already, dip his hand in there and rubbing the hand. Hand rubbing intensifies. And yeah, so, you know, here's an example of somebody that was of the world. He's pretending not to be, but he is. I want to skip forward here real quick. let's see here. Let's skip forward to chapter 12. Let's skip forward to verse 12. On the next day, much people that were come to the feast, when they heard that Jesus was coming to Jerusalem, took branches from palm trees and went forth to meet him and cried, Hosanna, blessed is the King of Israel that cometh in the name of the Lord. So Jesus comes to town. The people are psyched. Everybody's excited. They're like, man, you know, this guy raised someone from the dead. This guy's been going around performing miracles. This guy, he's got this huge crowd. He had a huge crowd out there waving palm leaves, and blessed is the one who comes in the name of the Lord. And you know, you just imagine that sight. You've got all this throng of people that are like, yes, yes, you know, wow, this is an amazing thing. Now let's skip, let's get over here to the book of Mark, chapter 15. Let's see here. Let's do start at verse 6. Now at that feast he released unto them one prisoner, whomever they desired. And there was one man named Barabbas, which lay bound with them, that had made insurrection with him, who had committed murder in the insurrection. And the multitude, crying aloud, began to desire him to do as he had never done unto them. But Pilate answered them, saying, Will ye that I release unto you the King of the Jews? For he knew that the chief priests had delivered him for envy. But the chief priests moved the people that he should rather release Barabbas unto them. And Pilate answered and said again unto them, What will ye then that I shall do unto him whom ye call the King of the Jews? And they cried out again, Crucify him. I always wonder how many people that were in the crowd yelling, Crucify him, give us Barabbas, were earlier, a few days before, part of the crowd throwing palm leaves down on the road. I said, well, that can't be the same people. Why not? If not, where were all the people that were throwing palm leaves on the road? I'm surprised they didn't show up. And like, you'd have this big clash and a big fight, you know, Jesus mob of supporters against the Pharisees mob of supporters. And you had a huge riot, but you didn't have that. You see, even sometimes when people say they support you, they're still of this world. And when push comes to shove, they're going to side with the world. You know, Jesus could draw crowds. I mean, no doubt about that. I mean, when he came to town, it was big news. I'm sure some came because they'd heard these great things, and some came as a curiosity. Some came out of spite and anger and jealousy and envy, namely the Pharisees, namely the Sadducees, namely the Jews. They came out of anger and spite because they're of the world. You've got this light of truth shining in this darkness, and they can't have that. They're making a business. They're making a living off of the people's sacrifices. You have to bring this perfect stuff to us. Oh, that's not perfect. Here, I'll sell you a perfect one and take that in trade. That was kind of the game, by the way, you know, when we hear about Jesus flipping over the tables and running them out of the temple. The game, one of the games they were basically playing is, you know, you had these poor people and they couldn't afford like big livestock to bring for the sacrifice. So they'd bring something like a dove, you know, they could afford a dove, you know, and even that was a pinch on their budget. They, you know, they'd go out and buy a dove. Well, the game would work up. They would come at, and you had these temple inspectors, and the temple inspector would look at it and say, oh, this dove isn't perfect. You can't sacrifice it. And the people are like, well, I'm trying to do my religious duty and sacrifice. No, no, we can't accept it. It's got to be perfect to be a sacrifice unto the Lord. But don't worry, there's some guys over here that can hook you up. They can hook you up, and they'd go over there with their quote-unquote imperfect dove, and they would sit there and say, oh, yes, this is definitely an imperfect dove, but don't worry, we'll take this dove in trade. And I've got this other dove here that I can sell you for a little more shekels. And they would run this game, and they would take the dove, more or less, that they got from this guy and put it in the cage. And the next guy that came up, they would run the same. They would give him the first dove. This was the game they were doing. It was a money-making scam. It was just a money-making scam. They weren't sitting there worried about the Lord having a perfect sacrifice. It didn't even factor into it. It was a business. Does that sound familiar? Look in the modern cuck church. They throw all of this, all of the truth, all of the principles out the window. Why? Because it's a business. They want to bring people in. They bring people in by telling them what they want to hear. And it's not just the Protestant. Look at the Catholic Church. And I know I have trad Catholics that listen to the show, but you've got to admit, you look at your Catholic hierarchy and, you know, I'm not downing on you, but the truth is the truth. You look at your Catholic hierarchy, look at your anti-pope that you have right now. He's telling you that you need to welcome the invaders. You need to welcome the invaders. You need to embrace your displacement and the loss of your homelands, because that's what Jesus wants you to do. You have a pope that is openly of this world. Is the pope catching any flack, by the way, from the world? There's your red flag. Is the pope catching any flack for the things he's saying? Is he saying controversial things that had the leftists and the globalists and everybody else up in a stir and condemning what the pope said? No! Hell, he's out there washing Africans' feet and kissing their feet and telling you this is an example for you as a Christian person. Look at the, I'm going to pick on the Catholic hierarchy a little bit. And I'm not picking on you. If you're a trad Catholic, you probably are agreeing with what I say. It's an uncomfortable thing, but again, it is the truth. And you have to be rude, because you could start off, you have to be careful, because you always have to be on your guard, because you start off with an idea that sounds good. You know, it sounds good. It sounds based in truth. It sounds based, really based in Christian principle. And this is what you're going to go with. But you have to be on your guard. You have to be on your guard, because again, the world will wheedle its way in. The lie will wheedle its way in. Let's look at, we're not done with scripture yet. Let's look at the Catholic Church's policy of celibacy for priests. Now, the justification is, you know, the Apostle Paul, you know, he lived a life of celibacy. The idea is a higher standard, whoever came up with it originally. I'm sure that was their idea. You know, we're going to hold priests to a higher standard. We're going to have priests that are of such high moral character that they're able to go through life without a woman, without a wife or family. They're going to be that dedicated to the Lord. But let's look in 1 Corinthians chapter 7. This is the Apostle Paul talking. Now, concerning the things whereof ye wrote unto me, it is good for a man not to touch a woman. Nevertheless, to avoid fornication, let every man have his own wife, and let every woman have her own husband. Let's skip forward, chapter 6. Paul's continuing on. But I speak this by permission and not of commandment. This is more or less he's saying, you know, this is my opinion on it. For I would that all men were even as myself, but every man hath his proper gift of God, one after this manner and another after that. You see, Paul says, look, this has worked for me, and I'd have it that y'all were all able to be so dedicated to the Lord that you could live your life this way, but I realize the reality is not such. Now, you look at the Catholic Church's celibacy policy for priests, and I'm sure when they came up with that, the idea is that, look, we're going to raise the standard. We're going to have clergy that is of such a high moral standard that, you know, they're able to contain, they rein in their fleshly desires to the point that they don't have to have a woman. And what happened? It was used as an opportunity, because if you're celibate, then who knows what your sexual preferences are. And it was used as an opportunity. Now, they wound up with, instead of a higher quality of priests in the church, they wound up with all of these homosexuals as priests. And there's an ouch. There's an ugly truth that no one wants to hear. Virtually all of these Catholic Church sex abuse scandals have involved what? Priests molesting young boys. Priests trying to seduce teenage boys. They act like it's a Catholic problem. They act like it's a Christian problem. They act as though the problem must be somewhere in the scripture, somewhere in the church, somewhere in your faith. The problem is a homosexual problem. The problem is you opened the priesthood to homosexuals. You wound up with your celibacy policy, you know, where you could have just had like, oh, there's, you know, there's our priest, Mr. Whatever. And, oh, yeah, his wife lives with him in the parish and they have two little kids. Oh, no, they put this policy forth and it wound up now you have your priests or cardinals or people even higher in the church hierarchy. And they're getting the altar boys by themselves. They're preying upon them. Not praying as in praying. Not P-R-A-Y, but P-R-E-Y. You see, they weren't on their guard. They didn't consider that this would open a vulnerability. It left an opening for the world, and they wound up with all of these homosexuals who are posing as priests. I told you we're going to get some truth. Getting my feet back under me. Last week with the first installment of the show, I still kind of my mind all over the place, and I still have distraction, but we're back. We're going to preach this truth. We're going to talk about the truth, and there's the ugly truth. You wound up, they compromise with what started off as a grand idea of holding people to a higher standard, wound up being a vulnerability, and then the standards actually went way down. And it was completely unnecessary, in my opinion. It was completely unnecessary. Paul, there is not scripturally supported. Paul said, yeah, it's great. I wish that every guy, you know, every male believer, you know, I wish you could be like me. I've, you know, dedicated my life to the Lord. I'm able to contain my fleshly desires. And, yeah, but I even acknowledge that that's not realistic. So, you know, you need to be honest with yourself. If you can't do that, you need to have a wife and you need to be able to, that way you're not getting drug off into these different sins from your fleshly desires. And now you're at a point where this has gone on so long, there's people way high up in the leadership that came up through the ranks that are also homosexuals. And so, of course, what happens? It's a cover-up. But you've got this combination of all of these homosexuals now have infiltrated. And I'm not claiming every priest is homosexual. I'm not saying that. I'm not condemning all of the Catholic Church. Don't take it that way. But the reality is you've got all of these people in here. So, of course, they cover for the other guys. If you're 65 years old now and you've made it up to the rank of cardinal, and while you were a priest over the years, you've diddled around with plenty of choir boys or plenty of altar boys, and then you get a report of this other priest is doing the same thing, what is your reaction going to be? You're going to sweep it under the rug. You're going to try to make it go away. Hey, what about those, though, that aren't? What about those that aren't homosexuals that are in the church hierarchy? Why would they be a part of sweeping it under the rug? Because it's a business. It's a business. In many ways, the modern cuck church, whether it's Protestant, Catholic, or whatever, in a way, they're no different than those merchants. Than those same guys that were running the scam in the temple that Jesus got so angry about. Your dove isn't perfect. Here, I'll sell you another one. It's a business. The truth doesn't even factor into the equation. So let's bring all this around to our kind of main overriding theme. You are in this world. You are not of this world. How do you differentiate that in your day-to-day life? I mean, you're in this world. You have to make a living in this world. You have to make your way in this world. You have to try to do something to make the world a better place. But yet, you're not of this world. Your heart has to be in another place, in the kingdom to come. It doesn't mean that you just blow off this life you have now. It doesn't mean that you don't have work to do now. And it doesn't mean that God wants you to be miserable now either. But at the same time, you're out of this world. So how do you differentiate that? And the answer, I would say, is truth. Are you seeking the truth? Or are you simply seeking the approval of man? Because there's going to be times, like I say, there's going to be times that you speak the truth and people will rally around it, just like with Jesus. The people rally, yes, they're throwing those palm leaves, figuratively saying. They're throwing these palm leaves in front of you and singing your praises. You have to understand that in 2-3 days, they may be yelling, "Crucify him." That's the way the truth works in this world. When you go through your life, when you speak truths and people love it and they're like, yeah, you know, I mean, that's fine. Accept that, accept the positive feedback when it comes. When they were throwing the palm leaves down on the road, Jesus didn't yell at them, "Stop it. You liars and idiots will be hollering for me to die within days." He let them do their thing. But you just have to be aware that, you know, it's fleeting. And the people, at some point in time, the truth will offend them. And today they may be singing your praises, but tomorrow they may be yelling for the world to crucify you. That's the way it is, because the world is not based on truth. This world, and I don't mean the creation world, I mean the world that man has created, the societies that man has created, the actual world as far as the human society, the human element that people have created. That's the way that it's not based on the truth. The people generally don't like the truth. So you always have to be prepared for that. And that was where your mindset comes in, that you're in this world, you're not of this world. When people like your truth that you speak, the people, if you seek the truth and all that you do, when people like that and they're singing your praises, that's fine. You know, let them. But understand that that's fleeting. And when the time comes around when they're condemning you and calling you names and you're the worst thing in the world, don't let that adversely affect you either. When they persecute you, when they make these slanderous accusations against you, you want to be in a position to where when they're finished, you can point and say, "Where's the lie? Where have I spoken but the truth?" Again, they'll have to slander. They slander you. They will come after you. They will lie about you for the simple reason that the world cannot tolerate the truth. Folks, I hope you got something out of this week's sermon here in the all-new Church of the Lampshade show. And one of the things I really want to focus on with this show is, again, we've always, even the old Thoughts of the Day program, we always tried to focus on the truth. And we always try to center our message on truth. And the Church of the Lampshade show is really going to be like, I think, as I'm envisioning it, a double-down effort on that, especially in matters of religion, but in other topics as well. As we do, we have the visit at the first part of the show. The idea is a double down effort to get to the truth of these matters, because this world operates, runs, thrives, lives and breathes on lies, on falsehoods, on contradictions. Our efforts here with this show are going to be to shine the spotlight on the truth. No matter how dark it is out there, you can light off a cigarette lighter, and that light shines all the brighter. The darker it is around you, the brighter the light of truth will shine. Thank you for joining us this week. Again, as we wrap up, I'm happier with this second installment of the show. And I think they're just going to get better moving on. And I thank you for joining us. I look forward to more of you join us next week. And we can really focus on the truth and spreading the truth in this world of lies. So be sure and join us next week. We'll be right here on Radio Arian for Grandpa Lampshade's Church of the Lampshade. We hope to see you then.
Yeah! 믿어도 괜히 날 믿어도 절족되는 걸음이라도 뒤돌려도 없어 못 피해 혹시 내가 날 지워갈지라도 원치라도 널 놨다 생각 말아 죽이는 머리 따라 피 묻은 얼굴로 웃지 못해 절대
All night, all night 계속 걸어가